Welcome to another episode of the Access Vikings podcast. My name is Andrew Kramer, joined by Ben Gessling of the Star Tribune from TCO Performance Center in Eagan, where we just heard Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, the Vikings general manager, tell us who they're drafting.
Yeah, he did. And after this break, we will tell you exactly who it is. If anybody that wants to sponsor this in the next 3 minutes, give us a call, because then we'll break the news for you.
We will absolutely
actually tell us.
Yeah. No, he did not. He did give us a lot of interesting comments, though, of the thought process, the process to this point, the two-year-long process, as he described, of studying this quarterback class, which has analysts saying that there could be six starters, six maybe first-round picks, probably not. But
who's number six?
You never know. Bo Nix?
I suppose.
Michael Penix?
Yep. As I've been thinking about five.
Oh, sure.
But yeah. I've been excluding Caleb Williams from it because they're not going to get him.
Yeah.
So, yes.
And we've known that they have been looking at this class for a long time, and Kwesi went out and said it at the podium today and saying that even since Kevin and I first got here, this is a class that we have been eyeing and done a lot of work on and a lot of research on. He said this is not a three-month thing. This is not a one-month thing. This has been a long process. And eventually in the press conference, he also said there are multiple guys we're in love with in this draft class, talking about the quarterbacks. And then he said there's multiple guys we're also in love with at the right price. So we've got six to choose from, theoretically, you know, as the analysts would break it down to. And I think Kwesi even went as far as to say there's guys even that people aren't talking about. We just love this class. But Ben, the talking point and the big point is that the Vikings sit here with two first-round picks. Kwesi also talked about the deal that they made with the Texans. What did you take away from what he said about that deal and where that sets them up for a potential move for one of these quarterbacks?
Yeah, I thought his background on the whole quarterback process was very interesting because a lot of it tracked with things that we've reported, things we've heard behind the scenes, but I thought filled in a lot of the puzzle pieces because to me, it makes that trade with the Texans even more of what we've thought it was. It felt to me like a confirmation of, this is gathering resources to move up and get the guy we want, even if we have to pay a lot to do it. I have been of the belief that they are going about this that way, that they are going to make the trade up and get the guy they want. It's going to cost a lot to do it, but as I asked him today, if you make the trade and you get a guy that's Patrick Mahomes, not saying they're going to, the odds of that historically are actually very slim that they will, but if they did, nobody's going to care what they paid for that. They will be heroes. The quarterback will be a hero. I mean, especially if he gets them to a championship, nobody's going to care what they paid. Everybody will say, great deal. It was worth it. You're a genius. I mean, you think about all the quote-unquote quarterback whisperer general managers. Ron Wolf made one decision to trade a first-round pick for a guy that partied too much, and it worked. Bill Polian gets this credit. He's done it twice, Jim Kelly. But Peyton Manning and Ryan Leaf, yes, he made the right decision, but you're sitting there, Peyton Manning was probably the more obvious one. The great thing about it is if you get it right, you're good for 15 years. I mean, the Packers have made three decisions, and they look like they were certainly right on the first two. Looks like they might have been right on the third one. That's like dang near a half century that it sets you up if everybody stays healthy and it works out. So the two-year part I thought was interesting because it explains a little bit of last year when I've reported this, others have said it as well, that they were very interested in moving up for one of those quarterbacks. But I think part of the reason they didn't do it is because they knew that this class was still there and they were going to have another option. It also tells you, again, why they were as tepid with their commitment to Kirk Cousins as they were. They said, we want him, we like him, but there's going to be a limit to this. There's going to be a ceiling. There was a ceiling last year. There was a ceiling this year. And really, I think this even goes back to that extension they gave him in 22. They added a year. But they didn't make the commitment. He wanted a commitment even then. So this year, he was saying, you got to commit to me. I've waited for this for 2 years. I think that drove a lot of what he was looking for. He talked about structure. I think there was a little bit of I've done what you wanted. I won a division title. Why won't you just commit? This is the reason, because this has been in their minds for a long time, and if they were able to keep Kirk Cousins, great, but they had a point last year that they stopped and said, we're not going farther than this. They did it again this year, and I thought a lot of what he said today sort of explains that thinking probably in more concrete, on the record, quotable terms than we've heard to this point.
Grand Casino would like to take a moment and salute the true football fan. The passion, the hope, the anticipation, that incomparable feeling of winning. Grand Casino would also like to take a moment to remind you that you can find all that anticipation, thrill, and winning at Grand Casino. Grand Casino, let your story begin.
Yeah, and you bring up the 2022. I remember that's when we had heard that Kirk's camp had given the Vikings three options, and they took the Vikings took the shortest one.
Yes.
The 1 year with the no trade.
Because the other two, as we heard it, remind the people.
The other
trade him.
Say it again.
The other, you said they took the short-term option of the three options. So
yeah.
The other options that we heard that year, just remind everybody what those were.
Well, no, what I had heard was that Kirk's camp had given the Vikings three contract options. So there was certainly an option of, there was talks, as you talked about as well at the time, of trading him. There certainly was. But there was three contract options that the Viking, or that the Kirk's camp had offered to the Vikings, and we've said this before. But the Vikings surprised Kirk's camp by taking the shortest one that they attached a no trade clause to, obviously. And now that was multiple negotiations ago, obviously. So, but to your point, that sets the precursor for they've had in what Kwesi just said today of we've eyed this quarterback class since we got here.
Yeah.
That was then. So you're exactly right. And I'm led to believe you're exactly right on like that they've been eyeing this class. It's a reason why the tepid commitments to Kirk were so tepid. Even though he goes 13-4 his first year with them, he's, as they're saying, playing his best football before he gets hurt last year, beating Green Bay the way that they did, a Green Bay team that went and made an impressive run later in January. All of these things coalesce and come together to such a decision point for them now that it's, as you said, it is fascinating to hear Kwesi talk about they don't have to pick up the phone. Like New England doesn't have to pick up the phone. He didn't say teams, but he's talking about the teams we're trying to be aggressive and go get our guy for.
Yeah. Send your fruit baskets to Josh Dobbs for that, by the way.
Right. For winning
those two games.
The Falcons and Saints games.
Yep.
It's a fascinating scenario, and you were talking before we got on and turned on the mics here about how the balance they're having to strike between whether or not you're going to pay the four first round picks if that's what a New England wants, or the three if that's your line. Kwesi today talked about a walkaway price.
Yeah.
What did you think when he was talking about we have to draw our line because essentially that's our leverage?
Well, it is, because everybody knows that they want one. Everybody knows that they need one, especially now that Kirk Cousins is not here. I mean, you would have been able to shroud it a little if Kirk was here, because you would say, okay, well, we've still got our guy. If it's not there this year, then we'll deal with it again later. Now it becomes even more obvious that they need to do it. And probably, I mean, Kwesi said it today, we've been preparing for this. I don't think that it's like if you've been preparing for this, you probably know what your walkaway price is. That did not make me think that they are going to suddenly get cheap. I took it as, and I've heard in the past that, you know, this hope of 3 years of first round picks would be a lot to give up. I think there would certainly be some heartburn about that. I think that's part of the reason they did the trade this year, so that you can say, here's two of them, and then how about 2025 with the idea that maybe we're not going to be that good, and it's a high pick, and then maybe you throw in some kicker, like a third rounder next year or something to that effect, or whatever it would be. But if the Patriots said it's four, would they say no to that? I mean, we don't know that for sure, but I did not come away from that today thinking if you have studied this for 2 years and this class has been the one that you have had your eye on, that you're going to stop short of finishing all of this work that you've put in because the price gets really high. Now, if there are enough guys, if this is true, and it's April 11th, so that is a really big if. The draft is in 14 days. Anything that is said in a press conference 2 weeks before the draft, especially about a team that is seeking a quarterback, that's a big if.
Smokescreen.
Correct. But if that's true, and there are multiple guys that they look at, then it may give you a little bit of a hedge if the Patriots say no. Because the Tom Curran report out of New England was that they want, a quote, a lot more than three first-round picks because they see a cliff after three quarterbacks, meaning after Drake May. And that may be a message to the Vikings, because I have said it. I continue to think that Drake May is the guy that they really want. I also think the fact that they don't control it, and the Patriots may take Drake May if they think he's worth that much. The Patriots will have to make the decision between the offers they have, not the ones that they wish they had. But if you can't get him, then you're going to have to go a different way and say, we can have another option here that's going to help us win. So they have to do all of that, and there may be some other hedges if, in fact, they think there are more guys to lead their offense, take them where they want to go. But I just don't think that if you talked about moving up last year, if you've studied this class for as long as you have, if you've aimed your negotiations with Kirk Cousins toward this point where you have the opportunity to go get a quarterback, that you're not going to all of a sudden say, you know what, that's a little steep. Let's come back to it in 2025 when we're heading into year four together and a class that may not be quite as good. And let's see if we like Quinn Ewers or Jalen Milrow or somebody like that. I just don't see it.
Kwesi was asked, are you entertaining any scenarios in which you don't take a quarterback here or your next franchise quarterback here? And he basically said, yes, we are entertaining. You know, we have to be open and flexible, all these things. But he also has to say that. Yes. And I think the truth in those words more lies into when he talks about how acquiring this 23rd overall pick from Houston gives us flexibility. And
talk about an insurance policy.
Yeah, an insurance policy, basically saying if we can't get up and trade up, then we have the insurance policy of having that extra pick to acquire another blue chip piece, potentially more use that other piece in another trade if it's to trade up from 23 to get another quarterback or trade back from 11 or like whatever it is. It gives them more picks at that. And when they talk about, and he said later on in the presser, there's multiple guys we love at a certain value. Yeah. They might like Bo Nix late in the first round. They might like Michael Penix late in the first round. Maybe they trade back from 23, get a second round pick, and then take one of those guys in the second. The point is that they might view those guys in that level, and having all these position points at number 11, at number 23, it allows you to further maneuver from those points and get you not too far away from jumping at an insurance policy. Yeah. If that is a Michael Penix or whoever it might be, if it's not their number one quarterback on the board. To me, Kwesi said a lot of things that made a lot of sense that didn't seem like just subterfuge. And he would stop short of answering questions if he felt like, I'm not going to go too far and answer that.
These guys generally say, I'm not answering this versus getting up there and lying.
Yeah.
That's been our experience to this point.
And so when he talks about, you know, the walkaway price of a trade like this, I do believe them that they've got, whether it's not first round grades, at least starter level grades on some of these other quarterbacks. And it makes you wonder that, yeah, what is that point? And do you believe New England, for instance, about we want more than three? Or is that bogus? Because if you view, as you were saying earlier, if you view Drake May as worth four first round picks, take Drake May.
Take Drake May, yes.
Yeah, like what? Like, so at this point, you almost wonder if you even believe if New England's worth budging. And when Kwesi's going up there on April 11th and saying they're going to, our partner in this trade has to want to pick up the phone.
Yes.
It says to me that they're running into a lot of hesitancy, a lot of resistance.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and I think if you're New England, you can say that. But if somebody says we're giving you three of them and a third rounder, let's just kind of use that as the offer for the sake of argument for now. I'm not saying that's what it's going to be, but just for the point of discussion, and you say, nope, we're not doing it. The team that picks behind you, the Cardinals, is probably getting the same offer if you don't take Drake May. If you think Drake May is worth that and you need a quarterback, take him. If you don't, then it's probably better to take the offer and still get a lot of value for that spot rather than saying, no, on principle, we're saying no. Like, okay, fine. But then you still don't have your quarterback, and you're going some other direction, and guess what? Now the Cardinals are probably getting that offer, it's probably the Cardinals. The interesting thing here, too, is we talk about kind of the insurance policies. Say the Patriots do say, this is the price, and the Vikings don't meet it. the two teams picking behind the Patriots, at least if the way we look at things right now is accurate, don't necessarily need quarterbacks. I mean, Kyler Murray, we can debate how much he is up for answering the call of duty, but they have said publicly that they are sticking with him at the moment, and certainly Justin Herbert, unless Jim Harbaugh wants to have another happy marriage with J.J. McCarthy, I don't think they're going to be in the market either. And if they are, then you say, hey, Justin Herbert, how about we take him off your hands for you? So, and now those teams will get offers from other people, like the Giants, who may need a quarterback. They're at six. So you do have to bid against other possible bidders for those picks. But there may be a world where neither of those teams take quarterbacks, stay and pick, and then I suppose then you're fighting with the Giants, probably.
The Broncos at 12.
Right, but you are not necessarily talking about taking a quarterback at spots where the price is maybe quite as high. I mean, I think on trade charts, you would look at 11-23 as being certainly worth four, definitely worth five in terms of where that would equate to. Now, you pay a premium because everybody knows you want a quarterback, but if May goes three and you think we like McCarthy enough and he might slide to six, it may not cost us more than 11-23 to get to five, stay in front of the Giants and take him. That's risky, but that could also be in their thinking a little bit.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how
kind of fun
this shakes out. Fascinating to see how it shakes out. And I also wonder, too, that I think there's a lot of talk about handshake deals. I think that's the thing that people like to talk about. And I just don't – I'm less of the belief, and also you just don't hear about – because we hear plenty after the draft about some of the conversations that went down, or even teams will put out videos of like what some of these calls were like. And we will hear about trade talks that happened that didn't come to fruition. You don't hear a lot about like, oh yeah, there was a handshake deal to this or that, because these teams,
it's like an NBA thing where we'll draft this guy for you and trade him later.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think Chris Webber
and Penny Hardaway.
I don't think that happens as often. Maybe I'm being naive about this certain specific scenario, but with the weight and gravity of these decisions in this quarterback class, I don't imagine New England, for instance, making a ton of promises of like, hey, if it's only Drake May, we'll deal him to you.
Yeah.
Because you have to be open to everybody else. And if you're doing handshakes, then you're breaking up the trust and validity of these relationships that you've been building to go back. And that's how you hear from agents plenty too, when they talk about certain GMs you can't trust, and you do lose business that way.
You're gonna deal with them again later.
It does affect you. So I just think handshakes are such a tentative, really gray area thing that I think it's fun for analysts and radio show hosts to talk about. I would just be shocked if that was something that they got a deal in place with three and a deal in place with four. If it falls this way, no, because the Broncos want to do the same thing, or the Giants want to do the same thing, or their phone is ringing off the hook because teams want to know about Marvin Harrison Jr. or whoever else is going to be available. Like, these things are going at such a fast pace and speed that I'm more of the assumption that when these things are done, they get out very quickly, like the Texans Vikings trade that happened, and then quickly the Texans move forward and use that ammo to go get Diggs. What did you think of Kwesi saying, I had a feeling they were going to do something, but they wouldn't tell me what, with this extra second round pick I was giving Houston?
Yeah, that was pretty interesting. And I tried to ask him, because I think Adam Schefter reported that the Texans actually the ones that initiated the calls. He kind of danced around it. He said, you know, we talk a lot about a lot of things, and I don't really remember when we started talking. So he didn't really peel back the curtain on that. But if they were calling because they were going to do something else, maybe they were the ones saying, let's go get a two and get a little bit more so that we can use the two on Diggs, and then we've got something else for our effort of giving up number 23.
Yeah, to your question, Kwesi did say, he said, I build a lot of relationships with these guys, just to, whether it's 5-minute calls just to feel something out, or maybe those calls go longer in terms of a trade scenario or some kind of hypothetical we want to talk through with a team. And he said sometimes those relationships kick back and work the other way, where they'll come to me with something.
Yep.
And
yep.
Reading between the lines, it seemed to be, you know, with Schefter's reporting that the Texans had come to him, it seemed that'd be the case with the Vikings. But because that's just it. If a team wants to give up a first-round pick, you're usually not waiting till April to be like, boy, let's make these calls and see who wants it. These things happen so far in advance and are constantly evolving over time that deadlines spur action, and the next time we see a move might not be until draft night.
Right, right. And that does, I mean, the deadline, I think you're alluding to this, may have been, let's go get Stephon Diggs. Well, we know that there's an offer that will do it. They may have, the Bills may have said, yeah, we'll do it for a two. And okay, we need another two. Hey, Kwesi, you've mentioned, and it could be that, yeah, that the conversation previously was, hey, we want to move up to have more ammo in the first round, so let's talk if you are interested in doing that at some point. I suppose the way that this could also, I mean, all both of these things could be true, I think, in this sense. The Texans may have initiated the call that day, but it could have been in response to their prior knowledge, based on previous conversations, that the Vikings are willing to move up. They are open for business, trying to get another first-round pick so they can play around in the first round. So they may have, that may have been a warm lead, to use the sales term, and they may have made the call that day, but the Vikings may have put the open for business flair out there well in advance of that.
The other part of Kwesi's presser today on April 11th I found interesting, I wanted to talk to you about, was the concept of you know, the player being that franchise quarterback, their evaluation reaching a point where they're worth going to get, but also what their situation can do for a player.
Yeah.
And Kwesi talking about how we have internal debates within, you know, our evaluation rooms about, you know, is this player going to be good enough to come in right away and be good, or is this going to be a player who requires the setting? And he says a lot of times when you hear about good quarterbacks and you look back and you study previous drafts, a lot of these good quarterbacks come out later in the draft, and how we talk about the miss rate high in the draft on these quarterbacks. Well, was it because of the quarterback, or was it because the team he was going to was bad?
Yeah. David Carr was the first guy that came to my mind when he said that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
A guy that gets sacked 80 times a year in an expansion team.
He got hit by a Mack truck every Sunday.
Yes.
And, okay, develop into a great quarterback
yep.
now.
Yep.
you think of even Sam Darnold, who's here now.
Yeah.
You know, you think of him where he has shown promise, and we know
Kevin was somebody's answer at some point, not that long ago.
Yeah, but then he went to a horrible situation.
Yep.
And you heard Kevin O'Connell talk when they signed Sam about how, you know, I've seen traits in this guy, like, enough to work with, and that if, you know, Kevin didn't say this, but think if Sam had come somewhere like the Vikings right now, where it's Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hockenson, Christian Darrisaw, your blind spot, you know, and you've got...
You have a fixture, you have a Pro Bowl left tackle.
You've got a former quarterback as a head coach and a play caller. You know, like,
throwing to the NFL Offensive Player of the Year from 2022.
So, short of sounding like we have purple in the name of our podcast, how do you feel like this scenario coming in terms of being rose-colored glasses, Homer?
Shots fired at the guy recording next door.
Actually, now that I say that, I didn't mean a shot at our friend Matthew Collar. I meant more like just fan podcast.
Yeah.
I actually didn't.
No, I got you. I got you.
Didn't even mean him.
I just was trying to ruffle feathers.
I didn't actually mean him. But
schism.
At the risk of sounding like a Homer, this is probably one of the best situations a rookie quarterback could come into.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that's... I mean, just evaluating what they have, I think that's a fair assessment of it, because you do have the two tackles. I mean, Brian O'Neill is coming off a bad year, but I think a lot of that was injury. You have Kevin O'Connell. You have a lot of former quarterbacks, like guys that played in the NFL to help your development. You're throwing to Justin Jefferson, your number two receiver, set a Vikings rookie record for touchdowns. You're going to have a Pro Bowl tight end come back at some point from an ACL. Aaron Jones has been a very nice piece for quarterbacks in the past.
My bet is he'll run for a touchdown this year.
Aaron Jones, yeah, he's
in a
been
way that
known
they didn't
to do that
get from the last guy.
Yes, yes, he's done that a few times in his career in a way that Alexander Mattison did not. Yeah, it is a really good situation to come into, and I think there is a lot of thought about, let's develop. I mean, that's probably part of the reason Josh McCown is here. When Kevin O'Connell talked about a more holistic approach to developing the quarterback, I think it was, let's get a guy in here that has lived this and can speak to a player from the perspective of somebody who had a long career. You know, much like you hear players talk about with Keenan McCardle, where it's, hey, this guy coaches me, but he played in the league for like 17 years. He understands a lot of the things about what it takes to last a long time. I think Kevin O'Connell brought Josh McCown in there for that express purpose of, let's get a rookie quarterback to learn under this guy. And if it's somebody that he coached in high school, even better. So, yeah, I think a lot of that is, whether it's Drake May or somebody else, a pretty good situation for a rookie quarterback.
From the owners' meetings, I did read that Kevin O'Connell told you guys who were there in Orlando that, you know, he wants to spend more time too in the quarterback room. So this adds to what he had told us at the combine about when we had asked him about having a 27 member coaching staff. He added an assistant to the head coach who doesn't have much experience, but will just be kind of a gopher.
Assistant to the regional manager.
And then you've got Josh McCown coming in, who I'd heard, interestingly enough, was like a late addition to the, like, so the Kevin O'Connell had told us at the combine, right, that this was a long process to find the quarterback coach.
Yep.
I was told that Josh McCown wasn't planning on going to the combine until that Sunday.
Yeah.
So like,
and then he flew in late.
He was hired Tuesday. And so this was kind of something where he might have been on their radar for a minute, but certainly wasn't planned to be interviewing quarterbacks until like days before the combine. So I do wonder if, you know, there's something in there that we don't know about why that was such a quick and hasty move for him to get involved in the process right then. If another hire fell through, I don't know what happened there, but it's just interesting to hear that from people in Josh's side of things. But Kevin told us, I brought Josh in, I add this coaching staff, you know, we're doing things because, you know, he wanted to, I think his words at the time of the combine were to delegate more.
Yep.
But then he adds context at the owners' meetings that, well, no, now I also, and this was after they lose Kirk, I need to spend more time in the quarterback room.
Yep.
So we're going to see not only Josh McCown, but probably Kevin being more hands-on with that, right?
Yeah.
I would assume.
Which may mean Wes Phillips takes on a little more role in the overall offense stuff, so Kevin's with the quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, even Kwesi talked about it again today, this idea of there needs to be a marriage between coach and quarterback. Kevin O'Connell has said that multiple times. Not every head coach we've covered has felt that way about a marriage between coach and quarterback. If it was a marriage, it was a rocky one.
That's true.
Certainly he believed that with – Kevin O'Connell believed that with Kirk Cousins, and I think even more so with this. Now, we're obviously speaking of Mike Zimmer. Mike Zimmer, I think, thought he had that marriage with Teddy Bridgewater, and then injuries hit and life goes the way it did. But that whole idea of this guy is going to be joined at the hip with this quarterback, I mean – this choice probably dictates Kevin O'Connell and Kwesi Adofo-Mensah's future in Minnesota. You know, I mean, maybe they'll get a second swing at it. Certainly, Rick Spielman got a second, third, maybe fourth swing at it, depending on how many we would consider there. But the decision to sign Kirk Cousins and the lack of playoff success probably led to Rick Spielman losing his job. This decision, I mean, inheriting Kirk Cousins was the situation Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and Kevin O'Connell walked into. This choice will be theirs. This choice will be one they are accountable for, one they are answerable to. So, again, I just think that with all of this time preparing for this moment, knowing what is riding on the pick, knowing that the rest of Justin Jefferson's prime is riding on this pick, that Justin Jefferson is probably going to make the decision about what contract he wants to sign and if he wants to sign one with you once he knows the identity of this quarterback. I just don't think they're going to get cold feet. I think they're going to do what they have to do to get a quarterback that they can say, this is our guy, let's go.
Is there anything else you wanted to get to on the quarterback front or the presser before we get to some questions?
I'm trying to think. I mean, it was a lot of quarterback stuff, obviously. I'm trying to think what else he talked about.
Yeah, he talked about, just reading my notes, he talked about an uncomfortable middle when it comes to these negotiations.
He used that language with Kirk, I think.
This is how, but I think he said at this point, this is one of those where we might have to, you know.
We'd have to move the middle.
Yeah, more of lean into the uncomfortable middle kind of thing. Otherwise, we've talked about a lot of this. Yeah, the insurance policy is the hardest part of this in terms of, yeah, just biting the bullet and overpaying for a guy you believe in.
One more thing. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, looking at the notes, one more thing he had mentioned, he had mentioned some of the details he was looking for in a quarterback. He had mentioned
overcoming context.
Yeah, the process, the rhythm. He said there's an accuracy component to all that. He said overcome a, quote, dirty pocket is something that is important. And then he said the intangibles, and then he felt how we measure them internally.
Dirty pocket in a playoff game?
How we measure. Dexter Lawrence sitting on your face.
That was a dirty pocket.
He said how we measure these intangibles of these guys, he said we feel we have a unique way of doing that.
Yep.
So those were the kind of main, that was just the only other thing I wanted to mention.
No, the other thing I would say is Mark Cragg, and they asked the last question of the press conference, and in some ways this cuts to the heart of what they're doing here. He said, how many quarterbacks do you think are worth a first-round grade or worth being your guy? And Kwesi basically said, I'm not answering that, because if I tell everybody that, then my phone calls get a lot harder. I agree with that. But that is the question, is how many do they think they can have, because that will inform your walk-away price. Because I think the Patriots are putting that out there under the belief that the walk-away price is after three. I mean, that you would say, no, I'm not doing this trade for anybody below QB3, which probably is Drake May. We probably figure Caleb Williams goes one to Chicago, Jaden Daniels goes two to Washington, and then it's the choice of Drake May. If the Vikings believe that number is higher than three, it could inform the trade that they make, because I do think there's going to be a trade. But if they think that number's five, they may do it differently than if it's three. I think the Patriots' bet is, we know that you like Drake May. We know that we think there's a cliff after Drake May, and we're betting that you don't want to see what's on the other side of that cliff.
Yeah, but you're right. And if they think, well, we'd rather have J.J. McCarthy and that additional first rounder, we'll just talk to Monty Austin Fort in Arizona, go up, get four, and then it'll be four straight quarterbacks at the top of the draft. And the Vikings, what they do have on their side is that draft capital that we're talking about, the three first-round picks over 2 years, over a team like Denver that's certainly sitting back at 12, has less leverage and less to offer. If a team like the Patriots is going to squeeze anybody, it probably is going to be the Vikings because of their four first-round picks over the next 3 years.
Yeah.
And we'll see. Yeah, what the
they
Vikings
don't have to go acquire. I mean, it's not the, hey, we want four out, let me make another phone call. I mean, the Vikings right now can say, yes, we'll do that. So there's probably a little bit of that gamesmanship too.
Which is why you probably don't need handshakes for your handshake agreements.
I completely agree with you. I don't think they're a handshake deal. I wouldn't trust it, frankly. I mean, if you're the GM of a team, why would you bank on, well, he promised, he looked me in the eye. He looked me in the eye and he told me, and I believed him.
That's a good callback to, was that about Dalvin?
Yes.
Oh man. Rick, it was, there was a lot of questions about Dalvin coming out of the draft, and you were asked about Dalvin's character, and Rick said, I asked him pointed questions and I believe him that he's a good person. And you know, Dalvin does seem to be, but anyway, that's besides the point. Our buddy Neil just wants to give us a nod. And these were questions that were sent at the end of last month, a couple weeks ago, but our buddy Neil from London said, not really a question, but a nod to KJ Osborne, whose leaving seems to have gone under the radar with all the comings and goings and draft news. He said, I guess it was an expected departure, but he has been a reliable wide receiver for us with the occasional big moment. What do you think of our buddy Neil tipping the cap to KJ?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, he did come up with a number of big catches, whether there was a Lions game in 22. He had the one against the Panthers, I think, in 21. Certainly had a number of big moments in a Vikings uniform for a guy that was a day three pick, a Rick Spielman day three pick. They got a lot of value out of him, and that's one of those day three picks that worked out among the many that Rick Spielman made. But that, he definitely punched above his weight class, so to speak, in those 4 years, probably to the point where he said, you know, look, I want to try to go get a bigger deal. And he knew that it wasn't going to happen here because it's Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison, and you're also paying TJ Hockenson a lot of money. So you're going to be number four option at best, and they're not going to pay for that. But yeah, he played his way into the ability to not just say, I'll take whatever you give me. Showed here I was productive, and you get a lot out of it. I mean, the number also kind of reminds me of this, but very Jarius Wright-like in just that sense of third receiver that when you need a big catch, and how many times have we said over the years they needed a successor to Jarius Wright that can, when your first two guys are covered, it's third down, a guy that can make a play. He did a lot of that.
I think of, because his first year, obviously, KJ was just a non-factor. He was a punt returner and not very good at it. He was alternating with somebody else, and it was like, boy, they can't replace Marcus Sherrills for the life of them.
Yep.
They still can't. Brandon Powell's been all right. And KJ comes in week two at Arizona, and they had that big game where they came back And
he had a big day.
Should have won, and he had like two back-to-back chain-moving catches to set up that chip shot field goal that Greg Joseph missed to lose that game. But that was the start of who KJ was, to your point, of like clutch moments, got to have it. Yep. He had a huge touchdown in that game, I think, in the first half. It was the
long
first play.
One, like a really long one?
It was like the first play, like
76
I think.
76 yards?
Yeah, 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 yep, yep. And so that's what he was. He was a big play guy, and then he was a got to have it guy. And he's somebody that, to his credit, he set himself up to go get the one-year, $4 million deal at New England. It's a place where he's going to get more catches and more targets than he could get here. Set himself up for more money next year in another free agent run, wherever that might be. He knew it wasn't going to be here, both financially and both role usage.
Yeah, one tends to track with the other.
Yeah, yeah. So, but to your point, somebody like that was just reliable. And yeah, I think Neil, there's a good shout-out to somebody who we generally would just overlook because he was a bit player.
Yep.
But somebody that stepped up when Justin Jefferson's hamstring went, you know, went kaput, stepped up when they, you know, Adam Thielen dealt with things here and there. So it was just a reliable guy that when they bring in Trent Sherfield to replace him and they try to piece it together, I think we'll notice that lack of depth come August.
This is a sneaky need.
Yeah, when Justin is saying, you know, I need to sit a day out or two at camp, and we're like, boy, that's all they got.
Yeah, huh? Brandon Powell probably plays more, too. Yeah. But
Jalen Naylor, they still have hopes for, but we'll see.
I could see another receiver coming down the pipe here. Yeah. It's not a huge need, but wouldn't be surprising if they address that somewhere.
All right. Let's go to the next question here. We had one about, and I'm trying to find it. It was about void years. Brian. Here we go. Brian.
Sounds like one for me.
With contract details starting to come out, the new free agents, curious to get your thoughts on why we're still using void years. We are biting the bullet this year and lead the league in dead cap this year, yet we're still pushing stuff into the future. What are your thoughts on just how they're orchestrating some of their contracts?
My accountant's visor on here. One point on this, and it's, this is a minutia thing, but I looked this up the other day. Harrison Smith's deal that we all kind of assumed had void years does not. He has basically a signing bonus of $7 million this year. That's the only guaranteed money in it. And then there's a bunch of – he has a $25 million base for 2026 that becomes fully guaranteed the third day of the 2025 league year. In other words, that's funny money. He's not getting that. It sets a trigger for when they would have to make a decision about him for 2025, because there's no way they're guaranteeing a full thing for 2026 at $25 million unless he's like has such a renaissance this year that they're like, yeah, because 2026 he's going to be 37. So I don't think there's any way that that's anything but funny money. They are not void years though on that deal, which basically means if you were to bring him back for next year, you'd renegotiate the deal, but you don't have to sign a new one with new signing bonus money. What you probably would do is give them a smaller base for 2025, guarantee part of that, and you're not kicking money down the road with him. So it's a small thing, but they did not put void years in that one. On a general sense, I have had a opportunity to talk with people in the front office about this a little bit, just philosophically on the void years. Some of it is if you think the cap is going to keep going up, which it is, because the TV money is going to keep coming in, there's not a huge cost to kicking money down the road, because basically what you're doing is borrowing it at negative interest, if you think about it, is that in the sense that if the cap's going to keep going up, so $5 million of cap space in 2026 will be a smaller portion of your cap than it is in 2024. And all of that money is projected to keep coming in, keep going up. So unless there's another pandemic that empties the stadiums, God forbid. You never know, I suppose. I hope we don't ever have to go through that again.
Knock on whatever wood you can find.
A lot of reasons, yes, beyond certainly reasons much more important than NFL revenue. But short of that, the cap is going to keep going up, and it doesn't really hurt you that much. I mean, I've heard them talk about this before, that they do not spend anywhere as much time worried about the void years and the dead money as those of us on the outside do. It hurts your cap a little bit, and everything does hit the cap eventually, but I think, especially as they've been trying to get out of the tight straits that they've been in for a long time, the void years have been part of their strategy to do that.
Yeah, and I think the Vikings do it in such a middle ground where you see some teams like the Saints lean to maximize the Drew Brees end. That's all they did was they kicked every to keep Michael Thomas, Kamara, to keep anybody.
Did it with Brees a lot.
Cameron Jordan. Yeah, all they did was they just pushed everything into the future, and then yet we see every year in February, the Saints are $40 million over the cap, and then every year they figure out a way to do it because you're right, because the room to mortgage these things is growing every year. And I never thought about it in a way of negative interest, but it makes a ton of sense of that. You're not having to pay more on that dead money 5 years from now or a year from now. It's only going to hit you. And I think Kwesi's talked about this even on the record of like, it really only hurts you if you do it with older players that you want to move on from. And all of a sudden it's accelerating that mortgage in a way that you did not foresee. But if you're doing it with a Brian O'Neill or you're doing it with these young players that are going to be around forever, we will just keep adjusting it.
Yep.
As we go along to find more room and find more room. And that's why it truly is a soft cap. It's not a soft cap in the way that we talk about the NBA and the luxury tax.
It's a malleable
cap. But it really is a soft cap. Like, it's not a truly hard cap because teams find ways around it constantly. Yep. And I wouldn't, to your point, it sounds like Vikings fans should not worry about this, certainly if the team themselves don't care.
No, they don't. And the only thing about it, like we're talking about a little bit, is if you move on from a guy, it does all hit at once. I mean, kind of like if you cut him and all the signing bonus stuff, it basically functions like that. But if you do it responsibly, or what they've done with TJ Hockenson, they put a void year in when they did that deal right away. Like when they signed him to that extension, the reason for that being they are already anticipating we're going to come back in a couple of years and probably need to renegotiate this thing. For one reason or another, we want to have somewhere to stash this money if we do some kind of a signing bonus conversion or we're changing around his deal or in some other way that we want to be able to stash a few million dollars of cap space into the future. So they basically did a preemptive void year with him, and I think they did that with one other player this year where it was like, why are you doing a void year with this guy? But I think it was for that reason, so that there's already a place to stick it if they need to do a renegotiation later.
Next question. Jeff wants to know, what is the most pressing concern outside of quarterback? So if you were saying, what do the Vikings need to address in this draft that is not the next franchise quarterback, where do you start?
Well, cornerback would be high on the list. I thought it was really interesting at the owners' meetings, Kevin O'Connell saying, we want to play more man coverage. I mean, he basically said that's part of the reason Shaq Griffin is here, is that we want him to play man coverage so we can move Byron Murphy back inside. Okay, what's the other piece of that? You still need another corner if you want to play more nickel and not have it be three safety nickel, because the other piece of this, I think, is that they want Harrison Smith to play less, not play 1,000 snaps again at age 35. You need a third corner, though. And do you trust Caleb Evans, Mekhi Blackman, Andrew Booth? I can't imagine that Brian Flores is sitting there after the way that season ended and saying, yep, that's what I want to roll with. So that's a need. And then I think defensive tackle would be the other one. Just having somebody that can push that pocket and kind of be an anchor in the middle. They have not had a good interior pass rusher in a long time. And we've seen when those guys, when you have them, we've seen it used against them. And we've seen when the Vikings have them, they make a big difference. So those would be the two in my mind.
Yeah, I would only add edge rusher. I know they spent on Grenard and Van Ginkel, but
you always need them.
But you could always use more. Just one more. With corners and
especially
edge.
If the ones that you draft in the third round and fourth round don't work out.
Wow, yeah, because behind those two that I just mentioned, Grenard and Van Ginkel, the two new guys, it's just Patrick Jones and Andre Carter.
Yep.
I think that might be the only guys on the roster.
I think you're right.
Oh, no, they added, it was Geiger Hill and one other guy, Jihad Ward.
Jihad Ward, who they're listing as a defensive end. I thought that was interesting.
Okay, so maybe they're viewing him more as an inside 3-4 DN. Yep. So either way, like, they need defensive linemen.
Yes.
They need
front
trenches.
Seven help.
Trenches help for sure. Yeah, and I don't think there's any other way around that. They blitzed at such a rate, as we've talked about, that was it was predicated based on the personnel they had. It wasn't like Brian Flores, and we've asked those questions. Like, it's not like Brian Flores came in and said, I'm blitzing 60% of the time, and I don't care who I got. It's they looked at the roster and said, what do we got for a four-man rush? Yeah.
What's in the cupboard, as Lance Bennett put it with Brian Flores' philosophy? He looked at the cupboard and said, if we want to get a pass rush other than Danielle Hunter, we're going to have to get creative.
And how long can we cover? Not long? Okay. Well,
yep. We're going to play zone. We're not going to cover everything because we can't with the number of guys we have to rush, and we're going to get there quick enough that nobody will throw over the top. And then at the end of the season, they will. And
at the end of the season,
the result of that, but
we don't even have who was banged up by the end of the season.
Everybody, DJ Wonnum,
DJ Wonnum wasn't even on the field. Yep. Obviously, Davenport never got out there. Harrison Phillips was playing injured. Jordan Hicks was at a hospital and was coming back.
Yep.
Like they had nobody to the point where Jake Browning was like, "There's T. Higgins. Let me just toss that right up there and get that easy touchdown." And a Caleb Evans is talking about the end of the year, "I need to figure out how to play jump balls because T. Higgins can do things that my guys in practice can't do, because I know he practices against Justin Jefferson, but he doesn't take every rep against Justin Jefferson." So,
and I wonder how often they're throwing jump balls to Justin Jefferson in practice, knowing that Justin Jefferson may come down awkwardly on an ankle.
And that's the thing. Justin didn't practice
half the year.
Justin's not getting scout team reps. He was hurt half the year. So, yes, there's like all these things where like their young corners are saying, "I need to develop and grow in ways that even practice is not allowing me to," or understanding that I need to create these scenarios myself in my own workouts. And anyway,
it is interesting the number of times where, and people will ask, like, they work on everything. Don't they have time to work on X, Y, and Z? And the answer is not always.
It's all game planning.
It's game planning. They don't have a lot of time to do development during the season we may not see this week, but let's work on it anyway. There's just not time for that, especially with rules on how much time players can spend on the field, which have a lot of good reasons for them, but they really are more crunched during a game week than you might think.
Yeah, they are, and especially how much time coaches, NFL coaches, spend on the game planning and installation and specific techniques for that game plan. It's not so much Ty Chandler, let's teach you how to pass block every Wednesday. It's you need to carve that time out yourself.
Yep.
Drag a veteran along, like, or hope you got a veteran like a CJ Ham to help you.
You could make the argument, like, as a devil's advocate, you could say, well, if we spent more time on player development and skill acquisition, would we need all of the labyrinthine game plans? I don't know that you're ever going to get a coach to say yes to that, but it's an interesting argument. Like, if you just said, let's get players better at these things so they can do them more effectively on a Sunday, we don't need quite as much volume in a week. I just don't think you're, especially in this day and age, I don't think you're ever going to get a coach to say, yeah, let's make that trade. But it's an interesting thought exercise.
Yeah, but I got 75 to 100 plays I got to put in for Sunday.
Yes.
And I need to make sure my fourth wide receiver understands all these things, because if Addison gets hurt right away or whatever, you know. Yeah, it's like
nobody's saying, let's have 30 and let's just do them really well.
Yeah, and O'Connell's saying, I was hired to out-scheme the next guy, so you're damn sure I'm going to make sure I out-scheme the next guy by making sure our tackle's pulling the right way, or like whatever. Like, it's like I think these coaches are so into their own heads of like, I'm the mastermind. This is how I need to outdo the next guy.
There are answers in the plays. How often do we hear that?
And there's a reason why we talk about in the media on the outside, when a coach has a revelation of, I just need to, it's talent.
Players, not plays.
Talent over scheme, and I need to mold myself to my, but when you mold yourself and you mold your scheme, it's still your scheme.
Yep.
And so even though Brian Flores looked at his cupboard and said, I need to mold it this way, he's still going to spend all week trying to figure out how to beat that Cincinnati protection.
Your scheme also can't leave in free agency.
And your scheme can't just up and abandon you. Yep. Yeah, true, if you only do it on players. So anyway, We'll digress from there. That'll be this episode of the podcast. We will come to you guys next time as the Minnesota Vikings pin down their franchise quarterback and pick the next guy. Please check out all of our work at StarTribune.com. We will have all the coverage for you right there.